Your name, please?
Charles Willey.
And your occupation and position?
I'm professor of sociology and chairman of the Department of Sociology at Syracuse University.
Dr. Willey, is racial tension going to destroy the city of tomorrow?
My viewpoint is that it all depends on what we do today. We are at a turning point in this nation, and I think that if we rise to the occasion, we may be able to experience reconciliation in the future, but if we do not, our situation will be much worse than it is today.
This is Viewpoint, a series of unrehearsed and personal interviews with people from all walks of life, produced by the Episcopal Church and brought to you as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest is Dr. Charles V. Willey, professor and chairman of the Department of Sociology at Syracuse University, a leader in the black community, and member of the Executive Council of the Episcopal Church. Here is the moderator of the award-winning series, Viewpoint, the Reverend Dana F. Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Dr. Charles V. Willey. Is there any ultimate solution as you look way ahead to racial conflict?
Oh, I think there is. The ultimate solution is that we must recognize that all human beings are just that, human beings. And the exciting thing about the urban situation in which we live today is that we have the possibility of being interdependent and relating to each other as human beings instead of relating to each other as if we were members of packs, birds flying in flocks, geese running in whatever geese run in.
Is there any validity to the kinds of questions that are asked, such as, would you want your son or daughter to marry somebody of another race?
Of course there's validity to the question. The validity is that it represents an unresolved feeling of prejudice. And so the person who asks the question doesn't have to ask anyone else, is he prejudiced? He can only look into the mirror and see himself. Male and female of any racial group can marry and can have children, and those children can be blessed, and those children might indeed save the world. Now, let me make a point here that I think is very important. If you will look at the lineage of Jesus Christ, you will find that he comes out of the house of David, and the house of David really grows out of a mixed marriage. So our great heroes of the past, even including Moses, whom we sometimes are not quite clear whether we should identify him as Egyptian or Jewish, comes out of the coming together of different strands. We know from biology that the coming together of differences oftentimes gives rise to strength, and yet in our prejudices, this is what frightens us so.
Dr. Willey, as a sociologist, I know you're also concerned with the growth of our cities and the problems that these have brought up. Are they in any way connected with the problems of racial conflict?
Yes, our cities have brought together heterogeneous populations. Some of my own research indicates that our cities are becoming more diversified and more heterogeneous at the same time that our neighborhoods are becoming more homogeneous. And these two trends, homogeneous neighborhoods, neighborhoods of like kind, in an urban environment characterized by diversity, these two trends are on a collision course. We've got to find some way of also making our neighborhoods heterogeneous, not just for the sake of making them heterogeneous, but for the sake of bringing people into each other's presence who need each other. And men and women need each other. Black and white need each other. Old and young need each other. And the fact that these groups are separated from each other means that someone is not helping someone else who needs to be helped.
What about the conflict which seems to have come up fairly recently between Negroes and Jews? Is there an anti-Semitism arising, or is this a shibboleth that's been brought up?
I think there's a great deal of pathology in our country, and that pathology reflects itself in anti-Semitism on the part of blacks, and it reflects itself in anti-Negro feelings on the part of Jewish people, and it reflects itself on the part of anti-feelings for the poor and oppressed on the part of whites and others who have advantages. I think what is happening is that the pathology is tending to proliferate and increase. And what we are seeing today is blacks withdrawing from whites and saying they don't need whites. And this is a continuation of the same pathology which whites have exhibited in the past when they tried to withdraw from blacks. And the sad thing about what is happening today is that whites are endorsing the separatism of blacks because it is a way of exonerating themselves from their previous patterns of segregating themselves from blacks. And so what I would say is we are experiencing a compounding of the pathology. And it's only when we begin to break the cycle, this vicious cycle of pathology, that we will begin to see that each person needs the other, that blacks do have something to give to whites that whites do not have themselves. For example, blacks can teach whites courage, and I mean this very concretely. To be able to persevere in spite of all kinds of hardship requires a great deal of courage. On the other hand, whites, particularly whites who are from advantaged circumstances, can teach blacks generosity, because the person who has not had much in the past has not learned how to be generous, but the one who has had a great deal knows a great deal about what it means to be generous. So here are whites teaching blacks generosity and blacks teaching whites courage. What better communion could we have than the coming together of these two races to serve each other?
Is black power or white power a pathological manifestation, or does it have something good about it?
I think it's a mistake to put any coloring on power. As a matter of fact, one tends to limit the power that one is able to garner if one limits the population from which one can get it. I think that the 1963 March on Washington for Freedom and Jobs was so effective because that march involved black people and white people. It involved Christian and Jews and persons of other religious persuasions. And it involved older people and young people. That was a powerful movement because it drew upon all the resources that were available at that time. Had that been an all-black march or had that been an all-white march, it would not have had the powerful impact that it did have.
Turning to some of the specific problems of both the city and of minority groups, the matter of joblessness. Are the companies who are now giving employment to minority groups as a matter of policy giving job training that is effective?
I'm impressed with what some of our major industries are doing. I think they're doing it directly as a result of the upheaval in our communities. Several major industries that could be named are beginning to put sub-plants into ghettos, or they're beginning to establish transportation systems so that people can get from ghettos to the industries, and they're beginning to provide the kind of supportive relationships, and many of the industries are providing on-the-job training, and I support on-the-job training is probably one of the most feasible ways of letting people know that the world of work is interested in them.
How are unions adjusting in helping this matter of giving employment?
Unions have a mixed response. Many of our unions are outstanding in the human relations field, but many of our crafts unions come into court with unclean hands. They still have raised barriers that are not necessary in order for an individual to practice that particular craft. Oftentimes, the barrier is that you have to be a relative of someone who is already employed, and that's inappropriate in the urban environment. The urban environment is a place where flexibility is one of the important ingredients in life, and we should be able to let all people who want to work, work. Let me make one other point about this employment situation. Many people in the United States are concerned about how large are the welfare rolls, but we do not realize that only about 5 or 6% of our population receives welfare, while another 20% receive income less than the poverty level. So we don't ask ourselves what happens to that 15% of our population who works but does not earn a living wage. This is an indictment upon our economic system that we had better give attention to. The big problem in this country is not unemployment as such, but it is the problem of people who work but do not earn a living wage.
Turning to the matter of the family structure of people, say, in the Negro ghetto, you sometimes hear stories that an unmarried mother will continue to have child after child and receive welfare. Is the family structure largely a matriarchy?
There is an interesting statistic that should be remembered by all. 75% of all Negro families are two-parent families. Many people would not recognize this in the light of the current concern about illegitimacy and so on. But the Negro family, the majority of Negro families, are the same as the majority of white families. And that fact should never be forgotten.
And the aspirations of the parents, are they the same?
Most of my research, whether in Syracuse, New York, or in the ghetto in Washington, D.C., indicates to me that Negro parents want their children to be doctors, lawyers, teachers, preachers. They many times do not have the resources to carry out these dreams, but they have the dreams.
How about the young people themselves, Dr. Willie? If he's given an opportunity for education, is this what he wants?
Well, this is what we have to do for all people who are born human beings. We have to provide maximum opportunities for all, regardless of their circumstances.
Do you find that the young people look ahead to the future with any great hope?
Young people are looking ahead to the future with the hope that they can redeem older people and that they can change the kind of society that older people have made. For example, older people are saying, do as we do and you will be successful. And that success involves more war, more discrimination, more hostility. That's not the kind of world that we need. So I think we'd better start listening to young people, and we might learn something about what kind of world we ought to have.
Who do you find is being most helpful, or who is being helpful at all in this matter of helping all people to be truly human? Is the church doing anything at all in this field?
The church is beginning. I am most impressed with churches that are beginning to make funds available to ghetto groups so that they can organize and make demands upon the rest of the society to do what the rest of the society ought to do. I would insist that this is probably an appropriate function of religious groups because the government can never organize groups to harass City Hall. But the church can do it. And by harassing City Hall, we may help humanize City Hall. Unfortunately, City Hall does not recognize that this is what is happening to it when groups from the ghetto come and ask City Hall to be just. But I like Dr. Joseph Fletcher's statement that justice is love distributed. And what the groups in the ghetto are saying is distribute love so that we will get our just share. And that will be good not only for groups in the ghetto, but that will also be good for City Hall. And I'm glad that church money is beginning to help these groups organize into power blocks to make these demands.
As you look to the future, what forces do you see that are going to help mankind? For example, what in health do you think that health is going to have any forces working for it so that man?
I am aware of one study that pointed out that a high proportion of people who eventually were on welfare were people who had health problems. And I think that we have got to ensure that health is available to all. I've been impressed by the comprehensive health care programs of the federal government, the partnership programs, and I think we've got to do more in finding how to deliver health care so that all people who need it receive it.
Thank you very much, Dr. Charles V. Willie, for being with us and for giving us your viewpoint.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview produced by the Division of Radio and Television of the Episcopal Church and presented in cooperation with the National Council of Churches as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest was Dr. Charles V. Willie, professor and chairman of the Department of Sociology at Syracuse University, a leader in the black community, and member of the Executive Council of the Episcopal Church.